The first presentation will be made by Professor James Cone, who is a professor of theology at Union Theological Seminary. Is perhaps the initial and most important proponent of Black liberation theology, who is working on a comparative study of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And then he'll be followed by Professor Bill Sales from Queens College and Seton Hall, who as a political theorist is studying Malcolm as a political thinker, looking at how Malcolm was able to bring into focus Pan-Africanism and nationalism with a revolutionary bent. And so we'll have those two presentations and then discussion. So that's a comment.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be a part of this Malcolm X study group. I have found the group to be very stimulating. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be a part of this Malcolm X study group. I have found the group to be very stimulating, particularly in my ideas about Martin King and Malcolm X. And since I have been doing research on Martin King and Malcolm X for about 7 years now, I always find it very difficult to talk about Martin King without talking about Malcolm X, or talk about Malcolm X without talking about Martin King. So even today, there will be some references to Martin King as we talk about Malcolm X, because Martin King and Malcolm X belong to two streams of the Black experience, commonly called nationalism and integration. And I want to talk particularly something about the background of Malcolm X's theology and thinking, largely from within the context of the nationalist perspective as defined by our presence here in the United States. I want to begin by talking about Malcolm with a quotation from Malcolm himself, and it is from his autobiography. And he says, "People are always speculating, why am I as I am? To understand any person, his whole life from birth must be reviewed. All experiences fuse into our personality. Everything that ever happened to us is an ingredient in the quotation. No one, I think, has pointed out the past and the current injustices of American society in relation to its inhabitants of African descent as treacherously and as truthfully as Malcolm X. Whether he was speaking to whites at Harvard University or to blacks on the streets of Harlem, the force and the veracity of his language compelled people to listen to him. Nothing was more important to Malcolm X than telling the truth about black-white relations in the United States and the world. He did not speak a truth that was derived from a university education. Malcolm X spoke a truth that he had lived, a truth that came from the bottom of the black experience and not from the privileges of the black middle class. He rejected Martin King's idea of integration and defined his identity as an affirmation of blackness in opposition to America. I am black first, he said. My sympathies are black, my allegiance is black, my whole objectives are black. I am not interested in being an American because America has never been interested in me." Unquote. In opposition to Martin King's middle class American dream of we shall overcome, black and white together, Malcolm X looked at America from the vantage point of what he called the Negro in the mud, and invoked the contrasting image to describe the socio-political reality of this nation for the vast majority of black people. While King was having a dream, he said, about the March on Washington. The rest of us Negroes are having a nightmare. Now, just as Martin King's dream has been grossly distorted by friend and foe alike, Malcolm's nightmare has suffered a similar fate. It is important to note that the distorted images of both persons are largely due to the work of the same people who regard themselves as friends and admirers of Martin King, but not of Malcolm. As Martin King is in danger of being romanticized into a saint, Malcolm is often portrayed as a merchant of hate and a fomenter of violence. No person's philosophy has been more maligned than Malcolm X. According to his enemies, particularly significant segments in the media, government, and the church, education, and civil rights establishment, Malcolm X was an extremist demagogue who was destroyed by the violence that he spawned. He was assassinated in February 21, 1965. The media unleashed its venom against him. Newsweek called him, quote, an extravagant talker, a demagogue who titillated the slum Negroes and frightened whites with his blazing racist attacks on the white devils, and he called for an armed American Mau Mau, unquote. Times said, and I quote, he was an unashamed demagogue whose gospel was hatred and who in life and death was a disaster to the civil rights movement, unquote. Columnist Walter Winchell of the Journal of America referred to Malcolm, quote, as a petty punk who pictured himself as a heroic figure, unquote. The Nation described him, quote, the highly intelligent, courageous leader of one segment of the Negro lunatic fringe. Now, it was difficult for the white media to evaluate Malcolm's life and thought without being excessively influenced by their own prejudices. That's why the Saturday Evening Post said of his biography that was forthcoming, quote, if Malcolm were not a Negro, his autobiography would be little more than a journal of abnormal psychology. The story of a burglar, dope pusher, addict and jailbird, with a family history of insanity, who acquires messianic delusions set forth to preach upside down philosophy of hate, brotherly hatred. We shall be lucky if Malcolm X is not succeeded by even weirder and more virulent extremists, unquote. During his life, immediately following his assassination, the black media often was as intemperate and equally less informed and prejudiced as the white in their evaluation of Malcolm. Of course, Muhammad Speaks, the official organ of the Nation of Islam, was well known for his vicious attacks upon Malcolm, particularly after his break with Elijah Muhammad. But Carl T. Rowan, then director of United States Information Agency, was greatly disturbed about the high tributes that African and Asian countries paid to Malcolm when he was assassinated. He said that he could not understand all the fuss about an ex-convict, ex-dope peddler who became a racial fanatic. Indianapolis Recorder, another black newspaper, contended that Malcolm made no contribution to the gains in social justice. He merely caused discord, contrary, quote, to the founding fathers of the Republic, unquote. Now, of course, Malcolm's hate and anti-white image is not widely promoted, certainly not as much today, as it was during following his death. And his name is increasingly being portrayed in a positive manner today in the black community. But the earlier feminist appraisals of Malcolm did their damage, and their effects still linger today. They encouraged people not to take Malcolm seriously as a contributor to the black struggle for justice. His enemies would prefer that he be forgotten. Malcolm, therefore, suffers today not only from a distorted image, but from historical amnesia. There are people, particularly among the young, who've never heard of him. Even black college students still refer to him sometimes as Malcolm 10. With such widespread hostile interpretations of Malcolm X, it's important that we at this conference take him seriously and make sure that Malcolm receives his due. And it's within that context I want to say a word about the origin of his thinking and how he understood himself. Now, the experience of oppression forces a people to ask the question of their identity. Who are we? Now, how a people answer that question determines their relationship to each other and also determines their response to the society that refuses to recognize their humanity. Oppression destroys peoplehood, devalues the history and the culture of the victim, and declares that they have no identity save that defined by slavery. As the victims are confronted with the assault on their humanity, they are presented with a choice: surrender to the value system of the slave master, or fight for the right to be who one is as defined by their past before slavery. Now, of course, the choice is never so neatly defined. History is much more complex and ambiguous. But this brief analysis is useful in clarifying the dilemma of African Americans, Africans who have been enslaved and segregated in America for nearly 400 years. No one stated the problem as sharply as did Du Bois. "Here then is the dilemma," said Du Bois. "What, after all, am I? Am I an American or a Negro? Can I be both? Or is it my duty to cease to be a Negro as soon as possible and to be an American?" Unquote. Now, Martin King and other integrationists answered the question unquestionably by affirming the American side of their identity. But the black nationalists, Malcolm's tradition, have been equally as adamant in affirming the African side of their identity. Because integrationists have been the dominant spokesperson for the black freedom movement, the nationalist perspective in America, as Malcolm in relation to Martin, has not been given its proper due. The claim of all black nationalists, past and present, is that black people are not primarily Americans. "We are," said Malcolm, "Africans who happen to be in America. We were kidnapped and brought here from Africa against our will. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock, it landed on us." Our significance and purpose, therefore, as a people, not determined by the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, or even the white man's religion or Christianity. We are defined by our resistance to America and its documents of freedom, and by our determination to create a society based on our own history and culture. The rejection of America and acceptance of Africa, sometimes symbolized as blackness, is the central difference between nationalists and integrationists, and it penetrates the very psychic depth of the personality of black people. This difference in emotional relations to America often leads to sharp differences regarding the definition of freedom, and you can see it especially in relation to Martin and Malcolm, and also regarding the means by which one might achieve that freedom. You can see that in relation to Martin and Malcolm. For Malcolm, freedom is not black people pleading and begging for integration in a white man's society. Rather, it means separation, and black people can rule themselves and define themselves. Freedom is political, cultural, economic, religious, cultural leaders of a people. No people can be free who are the slaves of others. It is from this tradition and from this context that Malcolm's thinking must be understood. Martin King can say, I am an American. I love America, no matter how alienated he becomes. But Malcolm will say, I love Africa. I love black people. Malcolm's thinking, therefore, is defined by a love that comes out of his own experience, namely the black experience, and the source of authority for that thinking comes from there. That's why he can develop what I would call a new logic, a new way of looking at the world, which is defined not by his faith in a God of the Christian tradition, but by his analysis of history. There's a logic of history. That's why Malcolm can say, and I quote him now and end here, the time we are living in and are facing now is not an era where one who is oppressed is looking toward the oppressor to give him some system, a form, a logic, a reason. What is logical to the oppressor isn't logical to the oppressed. And what is reason to the oppressor isn't reason to the oppressed. Black people in this country are beginning to realize that what sounds reasonable to those who exploit us doesn't sound reasonable to us. There just has to be a new system of reason and logic devised by us who are at the bottom. That's why Malcolm can say, don't let anybody who's oppressing you lay down the ground rules. Don't go by their game. Let them know it's a new game. The new game that Malcolm was developing is a way of thinking that emerges from the bottom of the black experience and not from his power.